This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. What inspires us to take that leap to open up to a stranger? Sometimes it's a romantic attraction and the hope of love returned, but sometimes we just want to share our story. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love, a column in the New York Times that features personal essays on matters of the heart. Since he began reviewing these narratives in 2004, he's read more than 50,000 submissions. The writings have detailed some of the most intimate experiences of love in the modern age. And after about 10 years of receiving these stories, Jones thought it was time to assess what he had learned about the intricacies of love. So he wrote a book called Love Illuminated, and Daniel Jones is going to read at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill on March 24th at 7 o'clock. But first, he joins us now. Daniel, welcome. Good to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
Take us back to the start of this. How did you start editing the Modern Love column?
Well, my wife and I, Kathy Hanauer is my wife, had edited his and hers essay anthologies. This was back in 2003, 2004, that were about couples mostly struggling in marriage in this post-feminist world where women are supposed to be able to have it all and have a marriage and career and family and have it all work harmoniously, and it wasn't working harmoniously, and they were angry about it. So she edited this book called The Bitch in the House, which became a bestseller, opened the door for me to have the male version called The Bastard on the Couch, which was the befuddled men's response. And these books together got a lot of attention. One of the people who sat up and took notice was the then style editor of the New York Times, a man named Trip Gabriel, and he wanted to have that kind of material weekly in styles, and thought we might be just the couple to do it. And we actually started as a couple editing the column, but before it launched, it was clearly a one-person job. My wife was working on a novel.
I really thought you were going to say you divorced and the whole deal fell apart.
It might have ended our marriage to continue doing it together. So I took it over, and that was about 10 years ago.
Well, the book, Love Illuminated, is really, it's not a sociological study so much and really isn't an advice book either. Tell us how you see this thing and how it's different than either of those.
Yeah, I love is something that's been written about before, and yeah. I thought, well, what can I bring to this that someone else can't? And, you know, I feel like I'm sort of in the Times Square of love, you know, where relationships are whizzing by me at light speed in huge volume. And I thought I was in a position to make sense of what's happening in love today in a way that many people aren't. And this book was really an attempt to figure out what that was and what I knew, what the trends were, how is technology impacting relationships, what's new about love today, and what's the same as it's ever been.
I mean, that is and you pointed to this post-feminist world. Obviously, there are things about living in the modern age that make a very old story, the story of love, unique from moment to moment. I have to say, it's kind of cool that you made this nod to the sort of stereotypical love book by beginning with a quiz. Give us some of the questions in your quiz.
Exactly. Well, again, you know, in my research, so many of these books began with quizzes, and those quizzes had actual answers, and you would have a score, and that score would mean something. I'm not really sure what it would mean, but the questions that readers, the people who were writing these essays were wrestling with questions that didn't have answers. And I thought, well, what kind of a quiz could I have that would reflect that, that would really be the questions about how we find love? Is it better, especially today, to work really hard at it and take advantage of all kinds of services? Or does that sort of ruin it? And is it better just to let fate play its role? How do you trust someone? And trust is a big issue these days when we're dating so many strangers. What happens when marriage gets monotonous? And how do people deal with that? And how do people rationalize infidelity? These were all questions that came up again and again in my reading and didn't really have answers, but they had a lot of stories associated with them.
And those questions really help frame your 10 aspects of love. Tell us about those.
Well, I just went through the arc of what I consider to be the arc of love from beginning to end. And it began with pursuit, and then people's feelings about destiny is the second one, and how we vulnerability is the third, and how we're vulnerable in relationships and how we have to be, how we connect with people, whether online or in person, how we trust them. Practicality was a fun chapter, which is all these questions that we face about how do we come up with a last name that actually is fair to everyone, whether it's hyphenated and all those sorts of things. The monotony of marriage is chapter 7, how we deal with fidelity. Loyalty is number 9. And finally, wisdom is number 10, which happens to be, ironically enough, the shortest chapter in the book.
And it maybe in some ways should be the first chapter in the book. If we don't start there, things could go downhill very fast. Talk about the modern, I mean, one of the modern aspects of love. When you talk about monotony and how monotony plays a role in lasting relationships, this is really a function of expectation, isn't it? I mean, there was a time, you know, eons ago when nobody talked about whether this is going to be interesting until we die. We're just married. These days, we have different expectations, and that contributes to, I think, some of the hardship. Is that some of what you're finding in the tens of thousands of letters that you've read?
Exactly. That's a lot of what I'm finding. It has to do with expectation. It has to do with fantasy and our fantasy of what lifelong passion should be. It has to do with how we are considered to be equals in marriage these days, rather than playing complementary roles. And one person has one role and one person has another. These days, we're individuals who can do perfectly well on our own, which makes love and desire and those sorts of things really the glue that's holding us together. And that's a tough burden sometimes to feel like you have to feel love and passion for a lifetime over the decades.
Well, and if you think about it as glue, then you've got these two completely independent flat surfaces that get glued together, unlike that tongue and groove kind of relationship where
exactly.
One of us has a strength, the other has a weakness, and it's precisely our vulnerability and complementary vulnerabilities that don't cement but, in fact, interlock the relationship.
Right. We don't need each other in the same way that we used to. We don't need each other in those complementary ways. And we're all free, sort of free spirits. And you know, that really does test marriage in a way that it didn't used to.
So what are some of your favorites?
Well, the column really breaks down overall along two lines. And one group are light and funnier and popular in that way. And the other group are very deep and dark and really probe how love can go terribly wrong. And my favorite of the first group was the favorite of a lot of New York Times readers. In fact, it was the most emailed story ever to appear in the New York Times, called What Shamu Taught Me About a Happy Marriage. This was a woman named Amy Sutherland who was studying an exotic animal training academy to write a book about it, and realized that a lot of these techniques they were using to get a dolphin to balance a ball on its nose, and that they were all done through treats and encouragement and redirection. And she wondered if these would apply with her husband, Scott, who didn't clean up after himself and bothered her in the kitchen. And sure enough, all of these techniques worked on him, and the Sunday that essay came out and became so popular, I get a feeling that they were being tested out on spouses across the country.
There were mackerels flying in living rooms
exactly.
All across America. But really, it took a trip to SeaWorld to figure out that if you give the guy what he wants, he might just pick up his socks.
Well, it was more the manner of the encouragement. She would heap praise on him for picking up a single sock, and he was a little startled at first, but it made him feel good, like it would with anybody, and he liked that feeling. And you know, it's just modifying people's behavior through those kinds of techniques.
Another one that was made famous on the Today Show was a November-December marriage that I think also a kind of an amazing story.
Well, what was so refreshing about this piece were these two people late in life and not really expecting to find that kind of spark again, and how their connection and their shyness was like how they felt in ninth grade, you know, getting to know each other. And she was so surprised by that and so grateful for it, this feeling that love can be this young thing again when you're in your 70s and your 80s.
A lot of modern technology these days in love, and you talked about the fact that trust is an important factor because there's a lot more sort of anonymity involved, or at least in how we get started. How big a role do you think technology plays in our understanding of love, the way we approach it, and our expectations?
Well, I think it makes it easy to reach out to people in a way that's that's a little fools us a little bit. So many people these days are getting into very deep relationships online with someone they meet in social media who may live, you know, on the other side of the country or even in a different country. And because there's no sense of possibility, actual real possibility to the relationship, they get very deep very quickly in this exchange of whether it's typing or leading to Skyping or however it goes. And this emotional bond, which has no physical component to it, can get raced way out in front of any physical connection until they feel like, well, we've got to get together in person and see if this works. And typically, it doesn't work. You know, your relationship has sort of raced ahead on one track and left the physical part behind. And it's startling then to find out that, whoa, this is this person? This is this person, actually?
Yeah. Well, it does seem to get back to vulnerability in one way or another. If we have to meet face to face, there is a kind of shyness and vulnerability that we feel, and we act a certain way. And the fact that we're both in the same situation, you know, we share that. But if you mm-hmm. can boldly either tell us who you are or create a fake persona, that takes away some of what, I mean, isn't vulnerability an important element in really developing a relationship? Is some of that lost with the kind of, with internet relationships as they begin?
Yeah, it's essential. And so is, you know, little body movements and glancing away, and all of those are the ways we get to know someone in a way that they really aren't trying to let themselves be known, but it's just as important. And you know, I hear story after story about how technology we try to take shortcuts past that phase because nobody likes it; it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And the shortcut doesn't really get you there.
And the interesting thing is because we're, you know, there's a little less at stake, we really haven't seen each other, it's a chance for me to be very honest about myself. But because you don't have to see me, I can also create, you know, an entirely false persona. So it kind of cuts both ways, doesn't it?
And we often don't even know that we're creating that false persona. We're just trying to present ourselves in the best light. But you can control that more when you're online. And you can click yourself off with the click of a mouse, and exit from it if it starts to get uncomfortable. But yeah, we can present who we want to be. And often people who are shy are the ones who seek out these relationships because they're more comfortable in writing. But then, you know, it's hard for that real person to catch up to the written one.
What about your own love life? What did you include about that in this book?
Yeah, I didn't intend actually to write about my own love life in this book, but I kept coming back to it because as I was learning about trends and how technology is affecting us and how we meet, I couldn't help but reflect on my own relationship with my wife, Kathy, and how we met and how we met by accident. And it was funny because at one point I wanted to go. We signed up for online dating sites because I figured I really need to know how this works firsthand rather than just reading so many accounts of it. We both signed up for two online dating sites. We're on for a while. She said that she was widowed, and I said I was divorced, but everything else was true. And it was revealing that we were never matched up.
Wow.
We do not live in a big city. We live in a small town. And I got a fresh batch of perfect matches every week, and so did she, and we were never included.
Did y'all go out with any? Well, no, you didn't do that. Of course you didn't go out with anybody.
We didn't go out with anybody.
What did you learn about your relationship, though? Anything from doing this book?
Well, mostly what I learned from the column is is what I think readers learn, and that's to have stories as touchstones for experience. And I think my wife rolls her eyes whenever I try to claim that I've, you know, become more of an ideal husband or more empathetic as a result of having this job. But I think it's undeniable. I feel like there's so many situations that we find ourselves in, whether they're frustrating that have to do with parenthood or long-term marriage. And I feel like, well, this is what everyone's going through. And I hope this is what this book can help people with as well. This is what the gritty reality of long-term love is, and it's got its highs and lows. But when you hear so many other people's stories, and I document a lot of those in the book, there's a sense of, okay, this is it. It's not the fantasy, but it's just as good in other ways.
And the fish is fantastic, you know. Throw him another mackerel. So
exactly, if you want to improve him,
you want to make things better.
Just come with a bucket full of fish.
Daniel, thank you so much. Good to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column in the New York Times and author of the new book, Love Illuminated, going to be reading at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill March 24th at 7 o'clock. For more information on that and everything else we talk about, go to our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Modafferi, and Anita Rao. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, the news director, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.